Good morning.
Good morning.
Bartholomew, you have indicated that there is a way in which we can, if you like, have a conversation with ourselves to get the answers to our problems. Would you elaborate upon that?
I'm assuming that when you use the word self, you're speaking in the sense of the vast self. Because quite frankly, you have conversations with your small selves all the time, and I think that's quite a different thing. I think the thrust of the question is important. Something that I have observed in my work with many of you is something that saddens me because it indicates to me that the thing that you most lack is belief in yourself, is belief in your own abilities to solve your own problems, no matter how intense they may be. In an age where authority always regulates your life, it must be very hard to say, I know what's best for me, because it is my life that is being unfolded before myself. And what you tend to do is to say, I am confused, I am conflicted, I am in pain, I am in anguish, I don't know where to turn, I will turn to someone who is wiser than I am. And I agree that it looks like some of you are wiser than others. Some of you play the game better than others of you. But I do not really think that that is the essence of the problem at all. I think some of you have more confidence in yourselves than others of you, and therefore put your own impulses, your own feelings, your own decisions into active practice. And others of you say, well, I haven't had a very successful life, so I think I will turn myself over to someone who seems to have had a successful life. All right, fine. I do not care how successful anyone's life is. They are not equipped to tell you what to do with your life. And the reason that they are not equipped is they have not had the experiences, year after year, lifetime after lifetime, that feed into your particular moment. Now, if any of you are in authority over others, and if you feel that you know the answers for other people, I think this is a dangerous ground, because unless you are somehow equipped to know all of the past input of that person, all of the things that have happened every moment of their life since they chose to incarnate, if you can make that statement, then you have a right to say, this is what you should do, and I want you to do it. If you do not, then please be charitable enough to say, it only appears to me that this is what you should do. All right, now people come and they say, but I hear all that, and I know that somewhere in me I'm strong, and I'm dynamic, and I'm alive, but I'm confused, conflicted, miserable. What is the solution? The primary and first thing that I would ever recommend to anyone at all is to first, and this is never met with a lot of approval, is to accept the situation exactly as it is. To make up your mind and your total being that this is the way your life is at this moment, and not trying to make excuses for yourself or for others or for anything. You're simply saying, this is where I am, this is what's happening, and out of this I will sit and I will come to see my way. I will see my way. When you go to other people and ask for their advice, a part of you is happy for their advice, and the other part of you says, I feel weaker now. No matter how good the advice, I'm weaker. I'm weaker by that much of an increment, because the next time I'm in difficulty, this person might not be around. What will I do? Inside yourself, some kind of panic begins to move, and you are afraid, and then life becomes difficult, and then you become hopeful that things will never go wrong again. My friends, life always is going to go wrong. Haven't you figured that out? This is the basic assumption. Life always goes wrong. Your car breaks down, your plumbing doesn't work, you lose your job, your lover throws you out. all of these things go on over and over relentlessly, and you keep saying, oh, someday it's just going to be all right. Someday this whole thing's just going to be wonderful, and I'm going to be so happy. Oh, it's going to be just wonderful. I don't think so. I don't even think, and this is the thing that will make you very angry, I don't even think that's what you want. I do not think that what you really want is for your life to go on in this wonderful, easygoing, happy, get up in the morning, isn't it a nice day, go through my round and go to sleep. I don't think that's what you want. I think that the exciting thing about being a human being is that part of the wonder and the joy is the fact that you do have problems, is the fact that you do have challenges, is the fact that people have to overcome. I think that's what makes the game worth playing. I do not think that if there was no score in a football game that anyone would ever watch. I do not believe it. The thing that makes all of the games exciting is there's winners and there's losers and there's challenges and there's almost winning and there's almost losing and there's all the tension. Without the tension in your lives, you would fall asleep. And in falling asleep, you would be so bored that you would ask yourself day after day, what is this all about? What is it all about? I think that your problems, as you would call them, are the things that make your life dynamic. And the power and the courage that you use to face those problems are the things that make you feel vast, dynamic, alive. Because having faced a problem, having seen it and worked with it and come to understand it, you do feel a certain difference within yourself. There is the wonder, and I think it's very exciting. And all of you who say, please don't give me any problems, it might be an interesting thing if you would have a year of no problems. Nothing. No one ever did anything but smile upon you, and everything worked very well for you, and everything was absolutely wonderful. I wonder how you would feel at the end of that year. I wonder. The thing that you're fighting the most is the thing that is most wonderful, which is the overcoming, the understanding, the expansion, the taking hold of and making something worthwhile of each thing as it unfolds. All right. But back to the question, which I hope please understand. When you are confused, what you are saying is that if your mind is allowed to make a decision for you, you can make a list on either side. This is pro and this is con. You're trying to make a decision of what to do. And oftentimes your mind can create as many on this side as on this side. Aren't you good at that? I mean, your minds are very creative. That's their job, to create ideas. All right. When you finally realize that the mind endlessly creates lists of the same length and the same power and the same desire within you, you become very afraid because you say, look, I can give you 6 reasons why I should go and live in Albuquerque and 6 why I should stay in town. And they all seem very logical to me. And how then am I going to make this decision? Because I feel in myself that it is very important. How then? This next statement you will have to take on faith, except for those of you who have tried it, which is this. I have said it until you are ready to scream, but you are not the mind. You are not the body. Mind and body are there, yes. There is no denying that. But you are something so much vaster, so much wiser, so much more intense and creative and dynamic than that limited self. And if you would just suppose that that was a true statement for a limited period of time and take your own, what would you call it, high self, vast self, seriously and say, now look. If all of these people who have been writing all of these poems for centuries are really true, and the one thing they all say is, you are not what you think you are, and what you think you are is so much more amazing. If they are right, from the first man who ever understood divine consciousness to the one who has seen it yesterday morning, all in between, they say the same thing. If they are not lying, if they are not fabricating, if they are not misleading you in some way, then we have to assume that they are saying truth. All right, then the big problem comes. Fine. How do I hook up with this? The minute you say this, you attract. Please understand. The minute you say, there is that wonderful wisdom, and there is me, and I have to find a way to reach it, you're caught. Because you have just bought the first line in the Grand Illusion. The first line says that you have to do something, that you have to change something, that you have to become something, or you have to stop doing something, or begin doing 18 different somethings, or start eating something, or not eating something, and it goes endlessly on and on. And then you have these wonderful systems of yoga, which are exciting, no doubt. How many of you are able to follow a refined system of yoga in this world, in America? How many of you? So you do it partially. You do a little of this and a little of that, a little vegetarianism, a little bit of yoga, a little bit of whatever, a little bit of everything. All right, is that a problem? No, it's not a problem. The fact is that you are working from the wrong assumption. The assumption being that there was a problem. The assumption being that you have to do something. The hardest thing of all is to say, I am that, and I am that right now. And that is what is happening right now. In these events of my life right now, it is that. The minute you turn yourself around and say, it isn't something to gain, to find, to dig up, or to fly to. It is this. It is what is happening to me now. Every increment of your life changes. Because if you honestly begin to believe somewhere deeply within yourself that every time you talk, divine is talking. Every time you move your right hand, divine is moving. Every time you look, divine is seeing. If you finally get this into your soul, that's what's happening, that this is God's life. There are two lives, God's life over here, God's doing his life, and you're over here doing your life, and somehow you have to find out what God's life is. When people say, what does God want for me? My answer is, what are you doing? That's what he wants for you. What is his will for me? What are you doing? That's his will for you. Are there two wills? Is there your will and God's will? You make this kind of assumption? There is only one. You say it over and over, but you do nothing. There is only one. One. When you talk, divine talks. When you move, divine moves. When you breathe, divine breathes. That's the way it is. It isn't something separate. You don't have to become divine. Don't you see the wonderful traps you get into? How are you going to purify yourself sufficiently to be a host for the divine wisdom? How many lifetimes have you played that game? Lifetimes and lifetimes I have to become pure. For God to love me, nonsense. There is no such thing as any part of the created as not being, not loved, as some great being loving you as something separate, but love itself. Itself. There is a tremendous difference between saying God loves me and saying I am flooding through with the love of God. There's a very great difference in that. If you say God loves me, you are caught, because you have found on the earth plane that unless you're very good little boys and girls, mommy and daddy don't love you. And if you get to be bigger, if you're not exactly obedient, then husband or wife doesn't love you. It goes on endlessly. And so you have this idea in your mind, this idea that you have to be good in order to be loved. Is that really true? Do you have to be good in order to be loved? I don't believe that. And I really do not believe that if such a thing could happen and God could stand here and speak, I do not think that the voice would say, I will love you if you're good. And I will turn my back on you if you are bad. But this is the idea that goes on in your mind. And the minute you say that, then you start acting separated. Do you understand? You act separated. And when you start acting separated, you start feeling lonely. You start feeling alone. You feel vulnerable. You feel afraid. You feel that you can do a wrong action, that if you do this, it's right, but if you do this, it's wrong. And if I do this wrong action, then somehow I am in terrible jeopardy. And then these wonderful stories that say you're going to go to hellfire forever if you do something bad. How do you stay alive with those concepts? Knowing If you follow this code of good and bad, every day of your life you do something somebody calls bad. I don't care how good you are, somewhere in this world you have done something that somebody calls bad. Because the rules change, you know. Have you noticed that? The rules change a lot depending on where you are and what you believe and who your teachers are. How are you going to keep it up? And inside all of the time is this feeling, I'm not good enough. I'm afraid. And the minute you become afraid, you are separated. And it is the fear that separates you, and we go back to the question, how do you begin to not have this separation anymore within you? My first request is that you just hold as a possible hypothesis that you are God doing his thing. Just for a hypothesis. Not his good thing, or his bad thing, or his right thing, or his wrong thing, or his high thing, or his low thing, or his middle. Just do it. If you can begin to feel that everything you do is somehow like that, then eventually there begins to take over you this wonderful feeling of harmony. Because you see, a tree doesn't sit out there and wonder, am I a good tree, am I a bad tree? Are my branches going in the right direction or in the wrong direction? And is there enough space between the leaves? Am I the right color today? Should I change to orange? What should I do? None of this. And you keep thinking that you are separate from all of that. You see, humans think they are separate, better, special, all this. I understand that. But I repeat, there's one. And the law holds. The law holds. It's all one. And it all is absolutely wonderful, just the way it is. When you start suggesting to yourself to let the struggle end, to quit judging yourself and everybody else, to be what you are, to express what you want to express, to cry when you want, to laugh when you want, to do whatever you want about this world, this anxiety. And soon there comes a wonderful feeling of not only am I all right, everything around me is all right. I don't have to change myself. And that means, lo and behold, I don't have to change anybody else. Because one of the games that you play endlessly is, I don't want to change me, but boy, do I want to change you. Because if you weren't the way you were, I would be so happy. Why are you such a jerk? If you would only be nicer, if you would only be more loving, more compassionate, more generous, more whatever, how happy I would be. Doesn't work. Because then they become what you want them to be. And then the next day you say, oh, it's beautiful looking at you as orange. Now I want you green. So now let's change the rules and just make you green. You were generous, but now let's be more generous. Let's be more, you see, it goes on endlessly. Because the basic premise is wrong. The basic premise is that somehow through your changing your environment, manipulating it around to suit your taste, that you're going to be happy. And I will tell you something. I don't think it works. It may have held for a while. But then Romeo and Juliet find out that they have feet of clay. You know, everything starts to fall apart. The money's gone. The car's gone. The love's gone. The anger takes over. The resentment. Where are you? Now let's go orange again. It's changed. All right, all of the time. The basic thing. If you could just try to believe that you are wonderful the way you are, that you are exactly all right the way you are, that frees everybody in your universe to be all right too. At which time you will experience something that you are looking for, which is compassionate acceptance. Compassionate acceptance says, whatever you're doing is all right with me because you have chosen to do it, and I honor your choices. I honor your choices because I honor you. When you begin to let everything go, when you begin to just act out of that piece of center, you will find something interesting. In the Christian tradition, it would be called the dialogue with the soul, or the practice of the presence of God. It has different names in different traditions. But what happens when you decide to let go is that you are no longer spending your energy extending outward trying to uphold your universe the way you want it. Your energy is now free. And what happens when energy is freed, and this is the law, it flows to the highest. When energy is let go and flows, it goes not to its lowest point, but to its highest point. And when that takes over in your life, you get into that feeling of what could be called a dialogue with the self. It doesn't mean you say words. It means that you feel, that you know. And it's on the wings of prayer, they say, that you fly and learn things. Well, what can happen when you've let this all go? Is that it seems, I see how they would say on the wings of prayer, because it seems that you are lifted, not your body. All right, I admit there are some that can even do that, but that's not very practical. But if it just lifts, something within you lifts up and carries and seems to fly up. In deep prayer, in deep meditation, what happens is that you have stopped trying to worry about your world and your choices and your life, and you have tuned into that uplifting power that is always there, and begun to pay attention to it, and it's almost as if you become mesmerized by its power. You know, it is, in its own way, wonderfully hypnotic. And it begins to pull you deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into itself. And then there is that feeling of flying. It is very sophisticated not to pray anymore. Thanks. You be sophisticated, but I want to tell you something. If you're ever in real trouble, and if you ever really want to know something, and if you are determined to know it, and if you are determined to know it from yourself and not from someone else, then I would recommend prayer. And I do not mean sitting there and saying, please, dear God, help me answer my question, and then getting up and going on. That's not what I'm talking about. What I speak of when I speak of prayer is whatever you do, in whatever position you get into, on the floor, in the chair, or wherever you are, you turn your exterior off totally, and you turn your interior on totally, and you just start asking. You just start asking. And the power begins to build. If you try it, you know it works. The power builds, and it builds, and it builds, and tears come. Things drop away. Vision is cleared. The scales fall. You do understand. You do see. You are refreshed. You do feel differently. And those of you that are too sophisticated, fine. Then sit there, trapped, because you're talking about energy. It isn't something magical. You are talking about energy. And prayer is nothing more than getting down and paying attention for the first time with that power that's going on in you all the time. And it's saying, that's the power I'm going to listen to, and I'm not going to worry about the outside. The trouble with most meditators is that they go in and out. There's 90% out and 10% in. Some people are very good meditators. Other people are terrible. If you are a terrible meditator, I recommend deep, intensive prayer, because it works, too. There isn't only one road, you know. And if meditation is something that never fills you, that never uplifts you, that never moves you, then don't do it. The power of prayer in its simplest form is simply turning off the external and paying total attention to the inner power And it is your inner power that answers your question. Make no mistake about that. I defy any of you to do 1 half hour of intensive prayer. Intensive prayer. Not just in and out, up and down. Intensive prayer over a problem. An anxiety, a pain, an ache, a heartache, and not come out different. I defy you. Because if you are determined to know, then that is one way to know. I don't mean ritualistic prayers of, you know, that come out of books. I'm talking about deep prayer. And prayer is nothing you can talk about because it's different with everybody who even begins to do it. But the fact is, it has been one of the oldest techniques for reaching God, and it is still a technique. But modern man is very sophisticated. And now we put on machines and we go to the alpha level and the this level and the that level and all of that, and that's all very well. But how are you going to do this machine in the midst of your extremities? You're in the midst of a life and death situation, and you say, please bring the alpha machine, I can't meditate without it? I mean, how powerless are you? This is a tremendously difficult question. If something is worth doing, it's got to be there at your command. Do you understand what I mean? It can't be something, this is why going to authorities can't work. In the midst of your anxiety at 2 o'clock in the morning, you are not going to call your authority and say, dear friend, I'm in trouble. You'll say, I'll see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and the phone will go down. You will be left. Whatever way you find to resolve your inner problems has got to be at your command. Otherwise, you will feel totally helpless. And I go back to where I began. You feel helpless because you feel separate, and separation makes you feel vulnerable. And prayer can bring you closer. Do you understand? Some of you will never use it fine. That's all right. No problem. But some of you need it. Because some of you have been wrestling with very sophisticated, austere methods of meditation, and nothing has happened. Nothing. I recommend it both, as you well know. But if you want to listen to self, if you want to have a dialogue with what's going on within you, I do recommend it. I do not think you'll feel the same. You know, answers to your questions do not have to wait. There is no such thing as time-space, in the sense that you understand it. And therefore, all of the answers to all of the questions are available now. If the question is in the now, be assured that the answer must also be in the now. You do not need an authority. You are an authority. And I ask you to begin to claim your own right of authority over your own life. Does this mean that there are not some exceptional people on the earth plane who, being in their presence, helps you? Of course it's true. There are certain people who, in your terms, whose vibrational frequency is on such a high level that being in their presence helps you do whatever it is you want to do. To pray? Fine. To meditate? Fine. To do whatever it is you want? Fine. Their power joins with your power, and it works for you. The problem is that they are few and far between. If you are fortunate enough to have one of those in your life, then by all means make maximum use. But for those of you that don't, please do not say, I have to wait until such a one appears to me. Because you might wait your whole life away, only to find that you are waiting for yourself. Do not give your power. Any true teacher will not take your power. Any true teacher gives whatever he has or she has
but doesn't ask for yours. Because any true teacher knows that the supply is infinite, and they can give everything they have and instantly have it returned. And they would never dream of asking anything from you. Ever. They don't need it. They have it all. Please remember this before you hand your life over to them, or your power, or your decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any questions?
If you have a huge problem, and if so, each year you go, is it possible that your high clock or whatever is telling you the consciousness that you've not come back to you today?
The question is, if you have a deep longing day in and day out, is it possible that your high self is indicating? Be careful. Be careful about this, because deep longings can come on a lot of levels. And one of the best deep longings is, oh boy, this is a mess I'm in and I don't like it and I want out. Or, people aren't being very nice to me in this situation and so I'd like out. Or, it's too cold in this climate and I want out. There are lots of ways to have your longing manifest as your ego. All right, now what then is the answer? I don't think that if you're being very honest with yourself, it takes very long to find out why you long for something. I repeat, I don't think it takes very long to find out why you long for something, if you are absolutely willing to be honest with yourself. Because out of it will come, the first things that will come out of you will be what I call the holy nonsense. You know, because there's this whole realm of holiness that people love to throw around. Oh, the masters want me to move, or, you know, it goes on endlessly. All right, whatever. I think this is the first level, and I would suggest you move through that as quickly as possible, everyone. Because you want to do something, you assume that God wants you to do it. You have to... All right, so then the next step is, when you have gotten through the glamour, then please look at your own ego motive. What is bothering me about the situation? Why don't I like it? Why am I unhappy? Where in this situation is my ego being pinched? Where in this situation are people telling me things that I don't like to hear? What's really going on? And when you get down to that level of honesty, I think it's very easy to find out. If you're in an uncomfortable situation because people don't like your opinions or don't like your thoughts or don't like you or whatever it is, then you have to face that. And it may be a longing to get out of that. Simply. Nothing more than that. And then the question is, fine, if you want to go, fine. But don't... I think the danger comes in attributing your actions to everyone's higher motives, you know. In other words, face what's really going on. Sometimes, my friends, when you face a difficult situation and really see what your ego is doing to you in it, you will realize that you were very wise to have chosen it. Very wise indeed. Once you have seen what is going on, then the choice is yours. To stay in it, to learn from it, or to turn away from it. Do what you want. I don't care what you do. What I care about is, are you awake when you're making your choices? Are you alive to the real reality of your mind? Or are you just pretending, going into some kind of automatic response? Look at yourselves honestly, and then all of a sudden, the same situation doesn't seem quite so bad if you have faced where it is that you are having difficulty. Now, if that is all gone and finished, and you still have a longing, then it is very possible that it's what I call the nudge. Right? And I think that I like to use that word because I don't like to make it too holy, but there is such a thing as a divine nudge. The saints or the yogis or the great renunciates, they know all about the nudge because they feel it all the time. It's like a bull pushing them down the road. a really surrendered person would not say it was a nudge, but a push. All right? But most people have to resort to what I call the nudge, which means that as you go through your different choices, all of a sudden you might feel a little bit of a push one way. Do you understand what I'm talking about? All of a sudden, without any really rational reason at all, it seems to you, push, I should do this. So, depending on who you are, you may do it, you may not do it. But those of you who are wanting to get in touch with your intuitive self, watch for the nudges, because they come all the time. And they nudge you here, and they nudge you there, and all they're doing is trying to just push you down a possible road that might possibly be a little bit more to your maximum benefit. All right, now what is this? Is this God with his finger poking you like a dough doll down the road? I mean, what is this nudge? Who's nudging and what's this all about? Because there should be a lot of misunderstanding. There is nothing outside of yourself. There is nothing outside of yourself. You are the self. That's who you are. Now, you have decided that you are this little tiny person walking down this little tiny road, and that's your decision. That's fine. It doesn't make it true, but it is your choice to see it like that. I keep telling you that if you could see with deep eyes rather than shallow eyes, you would see immense power around you all the time, every one of you. All this power, always moving around you. The nudge is nothing more than other parts of you, not something outside of you, not some god in the sky or some master with the pitchfork or whatever. It is you. It is part of you. It is you that just simply seems to push energy in a certain way. I'm talking about mental energy, because that's how you make your decisions, is through your mental energy. Your mind decides to do something, and you do it. And the nudge is the mental energy being pushed in a certain direction. Now, if you are very strong-willed, or if you have people in your world who are very strong-willed, and you have succumbed to their power, then you will listen to their nudges and not your own. Did you hear me? This is why I ask those of you who have power over other people to stop it. Because you are nudging them into decisions that are not your business to make. You are nudging them in ways that are not your business. How do you know which way they should go? You want them to go the way you want them to go. Why? Because it's better for you. But is it better for them? And you're always saying, oh, but I know what's best for you, dear. If anybody says that to you, please ask them to clarify their terms. I know what's best for you. I know exactly what's best for you. No. 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 At best, they know what's best for them, or think they do, and would like you to somehow cooperate. When you are in a position of power over another person, you are responsible if you nudge them in directions that they end up taking. I repeat, you are responsible, because it is you that's helping nudge. So be careful. If you want to talk about jeopardy, that is the only place I see it. The person who, by whatever reason, has power over a weaker person, for whatever reason they are weaker, and chooses to push them in that direction, making choices for them all the time, or even once in a major way. Be careful. If you have total access to every jot and tittle of their Akashic record, that means you know everything they have ever done in all of their lifetime, and therefore know exactly what is right for them to do, then by all means, nudge. If you do not have that, I would suggest that you put your statements in the form of suggestions, realizing that you have power over them. The saint doesn't even worry about nudges because he's just being ram-loaded down the road and it's wonderful. The rest have to take it as it comes. It's what's called the still small voice, all of that. Meaning, if you pay attention deeply enough, you will feel it. You will know. and you will respond. The power is with you. It always has been. This nudging is not a God who just happens to remember you today. Don't you understand the jeopardy of a God that remembers you someday and maybe forgets you on Tuesday? You see, when you posit that somebody else outside of yourself has to nudge you or to help you, you are putting yourself in fear. Because what if they forget? Or what if they're angry? Or what if they're just not here? You know, those of you who talk about the masters telling you to do this and do that, well, what if the master's, you know, gone to lunch or gone to another planet or gone... I mean, how... Don't give it, even on those high levels, don't give it away. The nudge comes out of you, the power of who you are, the power of everything that you are. Don't give it away. If you want to know an answer about yourself, you can find it out. The question is, do you want to enough to do it the hard way, do it yourself, or do you want to do it the easy way? Ask somebody else. You ask somebody else, and then, you know, you have an escape valve, because if it doesn't work out, you can say, they told me to do it this way. But they did this to me. Nobody does anything to you without your permission. Those of you who are weak, you're weak because somehow it worked for you. You don't have to be weak. Somehow the game works out better for you as weak. I don't think so. Because I say again and again, God really hasn't a lot of interest in worms. What he wants is dynamic, creative, exciting, alive adults.
If we are not to judge between good and evil, or what we perceive as good and evil, does that mean we are not to work for better conditions for black women and minorities?
I think that when you finally understand that somehow you are life living, and you quit worrying about good and evil and trying to make assessments and judgments against yourself and everybody else, what arises out of your more integrated self, because you are much more powerful than when you're not spending all this time being anxious, what arises is something that all of you claim you know and yet you never really consciously remember, which is this. God is a good guy. He is really a good guy. Now, what does that mean? In terms of energy, that means that when you have quit worrying about good and evil, when you have decided to live out of the center of who you are, what happens is compassion, love, understanding, wisdom. That's what the energy is. And when you live out of that, you don't think about, I'm working for a black or a green or an orange or a man or a woman. You don't think about it. You simply see that there's a situation. You are in the moment. It is spontaneously right, and you do it. And you don't say, what a good boy I am. What a bad girl they are. You don't think like that. You act, and you walk away. And you don't turn around and say, did I do it right? Did it work out right? You don't have to do it because you have not thought about it. It isn't a thinkingness, it is a doingness, and it comes out of this incredible power that you are seeking. And that power does not act in favor of one or other. It does not see separation. It does not see all of those things. It only knows. It moves, it is totally in the moment, totally spontaneous, and it acts with rightness, and it acts exactly at maximum for everyone in that situation. Not maximum for A and not for B, but for everyone. The sign of divine action is that everybody has come out maximum, everybody. Does that mean that the hypocrite comes out maximum? Yes, why? Maybe somehow the hypocrite's eyes are a little bit open. How do we know? The divine moves. It is not a thing. The divine is indefinable. You cannot ever use finite words to talk about it. It becomes nonsense. Until you have reached the level of letting go good and bad, you bet you better side on the side of the good. You bet. For you, for them, for all of it, you bet. But I think that's obvious. To me, that's an obvious question. You fight for the downhearted when you can. You do what you can for those that don't have it. You give when you've got it. You do everything like that. That's obvious to me. That is obvious. I'm talking about something so much deeper than that. I am saying that when you act from that point of, I am separate from this person and I'm going to move over here and help them, you are separate. There's you and that person and this problem. But when divine is in there working, it simply rises up and it acts of its own power. It knows, not with the mind, but with something much different. That, to me, is the life divine. That, to me, is the spontaneous existence. That, to me, is illumination. When you simply act, and you don't assess, and you don't question, and you don't try to decide if you were right or wrong. In order to reach that space within you, you have to let go of good and bad, because, let's be very clear about it, if you have a mindset of what is good and move into a situation with this mindset in your mind, you have already decided how to act, because you know what's good. You understand? If your mind tells you this is good, then you are not going to be spontaneous in that situation. You cannot be, because you've already decided what good is, and you're going to act for the good. The interesting thing about the divine, again, is it doesn't act for good or for bad, it acts totally. And there can come a place within you when you can speak and act and move with such power that you know that everybody, somehow, has been taken up just one little notch. Something in them has just opened up one increment into greater understanding. Not just the good guys. All of the guys. Everybody. And that's why, if you have your mind made up, you can't do God's will, because you've decided you're doing your will. It's your will that says, this is what I should do. And then you limit yourself. You may end up doing good for the one part of the group, no doubt. But the whole point of divine action is that everyone comes out a winner. Everyone. The divine cannot act in speciality. It cannot. And this is why I say, please let go of your beliefs. Let go of your ideas. Let go. Because when you let go, you know this old cliche, let go and let God. Well, in some very deep sense, it is true. You let go of your ideas of how things should be, and then the divine does what it wants to do. And somehow, things get done. Until that time, by all means, work for the good. By all means, give what you've got. By all means, love in whatever way you can. By all means, do whatever you can not to hurt others. Yes. By all means. By all means. That is the least that you can do for each other. Okay. Well, I've been on a long time, but thank you all.
Thank you, my honor.